Council members to please take your seat, and including you, Judge Pines, we still consider you a council member until the official language today, and also all the audience members. Thank you. Good morning. Once again, this is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for January 24th, 2002. Before we start our business, the meeting is now in session, and for a roadmap of this morning, the council will hear internal committee reports this morning before our lunch break. We will then return for discussion this afternoon on our four items on the agenda, which will include an update on the judicial branch budget for the fiscal year that begins this June. I remind you that our meetings are audiocast live with real-time captioning on the California Courts website. So portions of the meeting also are routinely taped for later broadcasts on California Court News or CCN. And for some of our meetings, we've had several hundred online visitors and even greater numbers of listeners for the archived audiocasts and video reports. So for their benefit, you know, I remind you, council members, to please speak into your microphone and to address each other by name so that audiocast members can follow the conversation and the dialogue as best they can in real-time captioning. As you know, by looking at our agenda, we will have several distinguished colleagues and visitors at this session who will present. They will be introduced when the panel is presented to the council. Before we open public comment, there are two duties that are my honor to perform this morning. And the first is to present a council resolution to Judge Burt Pines. But before I call Judge Pines up, I want to say a few things, and that is members will recall that in October, Judge Pines announced to us his intention to retire from the bench at the end of the year. He was unable to attend the December meeting in person, but he's with us now, and later he's asked to address the council. Before I have Judge Pines address the council, I wanted to introduce Justice Judy Ashman Gerst to make a few comments about Judge Pines.
Want me to do it at lunch? Okay. Doug wants me to wait till lunchtime.
Okay, so I'm informed that we're going to wait for lunch. But first, Bert, please join me here before the Great Seal of the State of California to receive this resolution. What happened to your arm?
I rotator cuff. It went.
Well,
the door.
I want to present this to you, read to you a part that's very dear to all of us and all Californians, to know the great service that Judge Pines has given to this state in his 47 years of public service. And so without reading the entire resolution, I'd like to say it reads, following a distinguished legal career of 47 years, including more than two decades of public service to the people in the state of California, all of us, and the last 8 years as the judge of the Superior Court of Los Angeles, and your service to the Judicial Council, we want to recognize sincerely your contribution to the fair and impartial administration of justice. I would ad lib here to say your work, your analysis, your comments, your input has made us a greater state, has made for greater policy decisions, has really brought about provocative and robust debate, and we're all better for it. And we're sorry to see you go, but you will be with us in committee hereafter, we're certain. And I want to say what I know is that your retirement is a loss to the Los Angeles bench and to California. And we thank you.
If you want
to say, why don't you do it there at the podium so we can get pictures of you? And we did allude to a lunch ceremony. We'd ask you to remain and have lunch with us where we have another gift to present to you.
I love presents. Thank you, Chief. I'm sorry that my shoulder surgery prevented me from attending the last meeting, but I just did not simply want to fade away and not express my appreciation to you and all the members of the council for your service. I wanted to first thank you for appointing Judge Emily Elias to fill the balance of my term. I first met Emily about over a decade ago in the governor's office when she was then a commissioner. But even though she was then a commissioner, she was one of the most respected jurists on the Los Angeles Superior Court handling a major civil assignment. It was an easy decision to recommend her appointment to the governor. I knew she'd be an outstanding judge, and she's continued to do exemplary work on our court. I joined in her nomination to replace me on the council, and I know she's going to be a very valuable member of this council. She's very smart, experienced, hardworking, and she speaks her mind. You don't have to worry about Emily being shy. So I wish her well and wish all of you well. Chief, I want to just take a moment to thank you and express my appreciation for your leadership and guidance of the branch and this council during the last year. I don't know how you must have felt when you woke up being the chief and looking at things like the budget catastrophe, 1208, the CCMS controversy, the criticism of the council and the AOC and so forth. As you said, it was an incredibly challenging year for you. But you rose to the occasion, met these challenges, and it's been very impressive to see what you and others have been able to accomplish during this last year. It really has been a year of transformation of the council, and that transformation is going to continue this year and next year because of the things you've put in place, the committee overseeing CCMS, the committee overseeing construction and facilities, Art Scotland's committee that's doing an audit of the AOC, and I thought that was a brilliant move. I have the highest regard for Justice Scotland and do anticipate that his report is going to be very thorough, comprehensive, and meaningful. The way the council has been operating this last year is far different from the council that I first encountered. Things are more transparent. The discussions are more robust. The council's more engaged. The council recognizes its responsibility to govern and is taking every effort to be in charge. There's more input now from the public. And further changes I know are going to be continuing in the future. So I want to thank you. I also want to thank you for appointing Justice Miller as head of EMP. He's done a magnificent job. He's easy to work with. He's open to new ideas. And many of the reforms that have occurred have certainly been a result of his efforts, and I thank you for that appointment as well as everything else. I want to also thank the AOC. I've worked with members of the AOC for the last 8 years in different capacity, whether it was CEJR or my work in various committees. I've always found the people that I've worked with, I don't want to start naming everyone. I see many of the people here. I found them to be very professional, dedicated, hardworking, and I do so value their work on behalf of the branch. And lastly, I want to just express my appreciation to each of the council members for your service. We cannot ask for a more talented, dedicated, hardworking group of people to serve on the council. It's really been an honor and a privilege to have worked with you. I realize there have been times when we may have had some disagreement, but I've never doubted your having the best interests of the branch and the courts in mind, no matter what our differences. So I thank you. I wish you all the best in the years to come. If I can be of any assistance, please call on me. I know you will. Thank you again. I'll see you at lunch.
Thank you very much, Judge Pines, for those kind words and all of your contributions and your continuing contributions. It's now my pleasure to administer the oath of office for the Judicial Council to Judge Emily Elias, who I'll ask to please stand in her position and raise your right hand. Well, before you raise your right hand, let me add to what Judge Pines has said about your background, because we're very fortunate to have you, and that is that you were appointed to the Superior Court of Los Angeles County in 2000 after serving as a commissioner for more than a decade. We know you've been very active in state court administration, and that's particularly judicial education. You devoted your time to sharing your expertise on civil with so many of us. We also know that you're aware of the extraordinary commitment that's required of all council members, probably in light of the large binder sitting in front of you today. Judge Elias, please raise your right hand to join me here for the oath.
I, Emily Elias,
do solemnly swear or affirm,
solemnly swear,
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States,
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States,
and the Constitution of the State of California,
the Constitution of the State of California,
against all enemies,
foreign and domestic,
that I will bear true faith and allegiance,
to
the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution of the State of California, that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation, or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully, discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is now the time in our agenda where we invite public comment. And at this session, we received a request from Mr. James Caller, who's present and who's also submitted written comment. Mr. Caller is here. He speaks on behalf of the Coalition of Concerned Legal Professionals. And Mr. Caller, welcome. And your written materials have been distributed to council members and also posted on our website.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is James Caller, and as just mentioned, I'm here on behalf of an organization called the Coalition of Concerned Legal Professionals. I'm going to start just a minute to tell you a little about who I am and who the organization is, because I think a lot of you are not familiar either with me or it. This is my 30th year as an attorney in California. I was licensed in 1982. And I point that out because I've been around long enough. I've seen a lot of budget problems in the courts before, a lot of financial crises before. I remember the Reagan era. I remember the savings and loan crisis. I remember the dot-com bust. I've been doing this a long time. I have, over those 30 years, been involved in practice in courts, trial courts throughout the state. I've had cases before at least two of the courts of appeal. And I was even fortunate enough to have two cases before the California Supreme Court. The organization that I'm speaking on behalf of, the Coalition for Concerned Legal Professionals, is an all-volunteer organization. There's no paid staff. It consists of attorneys, paralegals, secretaries, legal assistants, and members of the general public, whose primary purpose is to help bring justice to for low-income persons, and particularly low-income workers. The issue that I'm had submitted comments on and that I wanted to talk about today is one that I know is not unfamiliar to you. The budget problems, both past and prospective this year, were subject to a lot of attention at your meetings last year, particularly in September, and will, I'm sure, be on the agenda again before this year is out. The problems with the court funding that both I and members of organizations see now versus what happened in these prior economic crises are of an order of magnitude that is absolutely different than anything I've seen in my lifetime, and is prospectively could get even much worse if the kinds of proposed cuts that are being mentioned are implemented. And I'm speaking on behalf of CCLP because I think we need to not forget that when the courts are adversely affected, it has a disparate impact on low-income people and small businesses. Larger organizations, richer people, in this day and age particularly, they can do private judging. They can find other methods to have their disputes resolved. But if you're a low-income worker, somebody who's suffers a personal injury, somebody who's damaged by a large entity, the courts really are your only place to go. We've already seen, with cuts that have been going on for the last few years, some specific problems. And again, many of you are trial court judges. I know you know this better than I do. We have court clerk's offices in the Bay Area, in some cases closing at 2 in the afternoon. We have already long waits in some cases to get things in the calendar. Had a colleague of mine file something in Marin County, of all places, at the end of December. Earliest hearing date is in March. So it's already having effect. The concern we have is looking ahead, and when I say looking ahead, looking at this year, 2012, what's going to happen when the legislature gets serious about this year's budget and specifically looking at the courts? And this is why I'm raising this in January. I realize this item isn't specifically the budget on the agenda right now because the governor hasn't proposed his budget. I realize there was some discussion in the December meeting about your legislative agenda. But the concern that those of us who deal with low-income people who need access to the courts have on this issue is that just restoring some of the cuts, just doing the kinds of things that I know the Judicial Council has tried to do in the past, to work with the legislature, to work with the governor, to try and mediate, minimize the problem, but accept the proposition that the courts are no different than any other stakeholder. We don't view that as something that's going to work. Our concern is that the courts are fundamentally different than even other important things that governments do, like schools, like prisons, like the Highway Patrol, like the Health Services Departments, that this is a separate branch of government. And we don't get the view that your other branches of government, the government and the legislature, have recognized that. And what we're urging the Judicial Council to do is to be more aggressive in its approach with those branches of government, to not just accept lesser cuts, but really do whatever is needed, obviously within the bounds of the law and judicial ethics, but whatever is needed,
Mr. Kaler,
to get those restored.
Thank you, and I just want to say you have about 30 more seconds, sir.
Okay, that's fine. So, again, we realize this is not something that the Judicial Council is comfortable with. You don't view yourselves as politicians, but what we're asking is that you use whatever tactics are necessary to maintain the funding for the courts and actually even restore funding that's taken away, and to convince the legislature and the governor that you're an independent branch of government and needs to be adequately funded. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaler. Your points are well taken. We thank you for your comments. I don't believe we have any more requests for public speakers or written material to distribute. So it's that time in the agenda for me to give my Chief Justice's report, to be followed by the reports from the internal chairs. I mark my first year as Chief Justice on January 3rd with a brief message to justices, judges, and other branch leaders by email, and the message focused on the two most urgent challenges facing the branch this year, and that is the budget and AB 1208. The Council's adopted a clear strategy with regard to the budget for this upcoming fiscal year, and we have allowed later on in our agenda 90 minutes to talk about that, and also to talk not only about the budget but how it stands and how we're moving forward, and especially with the tremendous assistance that we've received from the attorneys through the Open Courts Coalition and One Justice. So joining us for the discussion later will be Neil McCarthy, who's a bar leader, Paul Kiesel, who together co-chair the steering committee of the Open Courts Coalition. And the coalition's concern and active support for the courts, including a rally held in Los Angeles last week, has helped bring attention, I would say, to the serious issues of consistent underfunding of the courts for judges, court staff, attorneys, but also for the state economy and the people we're pledged to serve. The Los Angeles Times editorial today speaks to the issue. We thank all of you here at Council, all of the attorneys and judges who brought the issue to the forefront so that it is part of the message today in the LA Times. The other issue in my message to the branch was one that concerns us all, and that's AB 1208. That's based on information, the bill is based on, in my view, partial information and some lack of information about what's going on in the branch. But we're doing our best to educate our fellow jurists and legislators, and we're finding strong support for opposition opposing the legislation as an unnecessary intrusion into judicial branch governance. In this regard, I want to recognize Judge Rosenberg for his efforts as chair of the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee, garnering 44 of the 58 presiding judges in the state who joined him in signing a letter in opposition to the legislation, and I think putting a rest to the notion that the bill has broad support within the branch. And in fact, 3 out of 4 presiding judges are in firm opposition, and several others have taken no position on the bill. And as Judge Rosenberg has said to one reporter, quote, what more do you need to know, end quote. In terms of appearances and outreach, since our December meeting, I've continued to travel to meet with judges and bar leaders and community leaders around the state. I know that many council members participated in Beyond the Bench, the conference here in San Francisco on December 14, 15, and 16. That conference brought together judges, attorneys, social workers, court staff, probation officers, and many others concerned with the welfare of families and children. I delivered the plenary address to more than 1,200 attendees at the opening of the conference. By way of background, the Council and the AOC have hosted this annual conference for 21 years, and that's with the support of many organizations and individuals. It continues to grow. More disciplines are beginning to be brought into the fold because we're beginning to realize how multidimensional the issues are facing families and children. So the decision to proceed with the conference this year, given the budget situation, was difficult. It was made, and it was helped by funding from several sources, including grants from the United States Department of Health and Human Services, the California Endowment, and also this time user fees, registration fees were used to fund the conference. And I want to acknowledge the more than 100 judges and other volunteers who serve as faculty or made the conference possible. It's very popular. It's very well respected. People are very enthusiastic to attend that conference. So I want to specially acknowledge Diane Nunn and her staff at the Center for Children, Families, and the Courts for the considerable effort that it took to plan and staff the event. Also at a reception on the first day of that conference, I presented the Council's first Richard D. Huffman Justice for Children and Families Award to Justice Huffman and Bill Vickery. Early in the new year, I had the pleasure of meeting with the bench at several courts, including the Superior Court of San Mateo, and just yesterday, the Superior Court of San Diego. Those were incredible one-on-one judge sessions where it was open up to question and answer, and we had a frank discussion about the budget and AB 1208 and other issues that are of interest to judges, including one that's in your email today about the Economic Forum 700 that the subcommittee's been working on that gives a lot of answers to some of the concerns that judges have about that. Judge Rosenberg invited me to speak with the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee, Executive Committee, that was by video conference in January. I've had several visits with bar groups, including swearing in the new board members for the Asian Pacific Bar Association of Sacramento. That's been about a 20-year tradition with me and that organization. I delivered the keynote at the 41st Annual Judges Night hosted by the Alameda Contra Costa Trial Lawyers Association. Just last evening, I was the speaker at the San Diego Joint Inns of Court dinner with about 400 people, an annual event that brings in 5 different inns of court. And I've also devoted considerable time in the last month to briefing key media on branch issues. So I've gone about with the Los Angeles editorial board. Thank you, Miriam Krinsky, for arranging that, as well as speaking with yesterday the San Diego Union Tribune. Have other meetings this week to speak with San Jose Mercury News, San Francisco Chronicle, and the Sacramento Bee. Accompanying me on those meetings are Ron and Kurt, as schedule permits. I also would like to say that I had the honor to accept the invitation at the Governor's State of the State Address last week at the Capitol, and had an opportunity thereafter to meet with legislative leaders about branch budget restoration and AB 1208. I think that about concludes my report from December. So I'll turn this over to Ron for the Administrative Director's Report.
Thank you, Chief Justice and members of the Council. You have a copy of my Interim Director's Report that outlines all of the activities going on within the AOC and the Council, and I want to thank AOC directors and staff for updating these activities. As you can see, it's a pretty busy time, and the number of things that the AOC is involved in is significant. So I want to thank our staff for pulling that together for me. I won't repeat things that are written in the report. You can read those at your leisure. I will just highlight a couple of items. One, we're going to be talking a fair amount about the budget this afternoon, the budget announced by the governor, the activities that are taking place with the Open Courts Coalition, the BBC, and whatnot. I do want to just highlight that there are two videos that are on our website that are worthy of note, and you'll be seeing one of them today. I'm not sure if you'll see both, but you'll be seeing one of them today. But the focus is on the impact of these budget cuts on court users, the actual people who need to use the courts, not so much an institutional impact on the courts themselves, but what does it mean when a court isn't available for individuals who need to use the courts? And so that's been sort of the focus for information to the legislature and the public in terms of the impact of these budget cuts that have been taking place. At the December meeting, you allocated funds to the San Joaquin Superior Court for them to be able to meet urgent needs. And when you did that, you directed the AOC to provide the court with any assistance in terms of their budget, their processes and whatnot that may be of assistance in terms of dealing with the limited resources that they have. So I do want to recognize Jody Patel, who has put together a team consisting of Kim Turner, David Yamasaki, Alan Carlson, Kitty Torrey,
Mike Planet,
all very busy court executive officers who are willing to donate their time to be of assistance to the San Joaquin Court. And I think that's a sense of court family that we really have, and that how appreciative we are that they're willing to do that. So thank you so much for all of those extra efforts at a time when everybody is very busy. And special thanks to Rosa Junquero, the court executive in San Joaquin County. It's very difficult, particularly with reduced resources for her that you heard about and are familiar with, and the willingness to open up her processes and her court to have her colleagues come in and try to assist any way that we can, or have another set of eyes looking at various components of the court is a very open gesture on Rosa's part. And so we're grateful to her. The only thing about case management that I wanted to mention is we are in the process of working with Grant Thornton to look at a variety of aspects to CCMS, the cost of CCMS, and various alternatives that are there and deployment options. They have been in touch with 22 courts that they believe potentially could be candidates for sort of the next wave of CCMS deployments. And so those courts have agreed to have Grant Thornton come out, do site visits, and do an evaluation to come up with potentially a list of 10 additional courts that would be in the next wave for CCMS, or that have demonstrated need for that process. The original timeline was for Grant Thornton to make a verbal report to you at your February meeting, followed with a written report in March. With the amount of work that they have identified that they need to do, that schedule may slip slightly. They will be prepared to give you a verbal report in February, whether they have completed their work or not. We're meeting with them weekly, every Friday. We have an update call with Judge Herman and Justice Berniers and our staff to be able to track and guide their work so that we keep them on track as much as possible. But just so you know that the word we're getting now is that they believe they're going to have to take a little more time than originally thought. But I think from all of our perspective, we want it done right, and we want it to be thorough even more than fast. And then finally, just on the facilities, I think it's worthy of note. And on page 8, you see a facilities update. We have appointed an independent oversight consultant, Pegasus Global Holdings, that you may want to Google and take a look at. But this is a group that the Court Facilities Working Group felt would be helpful just in terms of verifying that the cost that we are spending on construction and other processes involved in the construction of these facilities is consistent with industry practices and appropriate costs. So they will be doing their work. The Facilities Working Group selected this independent consultant, and so we think they will give a very objective oversight and review of the processes and costs that we have going forward. You can see the number of projects and activities that are ongoing, and certainly want to express appreciation for Justice Hill, who chairs the Facilities Working Group, and the assistance that he's provided ROCCM staff in guiding these projects, as well as the facility maintenance pilot program that will be ready to start with local courts doing maintenance, if they so choose, beginning in July. So that's a summary, Chief Justice. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions or comment on the director's report? Thank you, Ron. Justice Baxter is unavailable to give the report for the Policy Coordination and Liaison Committee. So, Judge Herman, I understand you're pinch-hitting.
Thank you, Chief. I am. Justice Baxter is unavailable because he's on vacation on a cruise, and so we wish him a good time. So the Policy Committee has met once so far this year, and at the January 12th meeting, the committee wasn't presented any legislation to take a position on, mainly because we're early in the legislative cycle, obviously, but we were provided an update on the budget and on select legislation of interest to the branch, specifically AB 1208, as well as legislation related to expedited appellate review in certain sequence of cases, which is interesting and high impact in terms of our appellate courts, and so we will continue to monitor that and at some point determine whether to take a position or not on the legislation. The legislature reconvened on January 4th for the second year of the 2011-2012 session. New bills are slowly starting to be introduced, and the Office of Governmental Affairs staff is reviewing all bills to identify those of interest to and with impact on the judicial branch. And the deadline for introduction of bills in 2012 is February 24th. In future reports, we'll, of course, keep the council informed of the progress of bills of interest, including our Judicial Council-sponsored bills. And I just want to say that as vice chair of the Policy Committee, we're extremely grateful to all the good work of Dan Pone, Donna Hershowitz, June Clark, of course, Kurt Child, who is almost 24/7 in terms of availability on breaking news on the legislative front. So,
thank you, Judge Herman. Any questions or comments on Judge Herman's report? Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Executive and Planning Committee, Justice Miller.
Thank you, Chief. Executive and Planning has met 5 times since our last Judicial Council meeting in December, by email, by telephone, and yesterday in person. All of those minutes are publicly posted on the California Courts website, and they're linked to the meeting agenda under Internal Committee Chair Presentations. Just a couple of matters that have been significant over the last month that we've dealt with. The first was the CCMS Internal Committee's recommendation to suspend the discussion, information exchange, and planning on potential collaboration with the Chan Sung Soon Family Foundation and State Bar to use grant money and other resources for the early deployment of CCMS. We received a letter from the County of Los Angeles Board of Supervising asking the council to revise certain guidelines the council adopted in August 2011 that govern eligibility for the amnesty program it established under Vehicle Code Section 42008.7. We also reviewed nominations that were submitted to us for two out-of-cycle vacancies, one on the Judicial Council with the retirement of Judge Burt Pines, and the second on the Court Interpreters Advisory Panel. And then yesterday we met in person with regards to the annual agenda conversations that we have with each of the chairs of the advisory committees and task forces that E&P oversees. We had great discussions with them with regards to their key objectives and priorities for the coming year. That is the extent of our activity the last month.
Thank you, Justice Miller. Any comments or questions? Thank you. Next we'll hear from Rules and Projects Committee, Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. The Rules and Projects Committee has met twice since our last meeting on December, since the Council's last meeting on December the 13th. RUPRO met by phone on January 20th, last Friday, for a briefing to prepare for its meeting to review the annual agendas of advisory groups overseen by RUPRO. And then yesterday, RUPRO met in person to review annual agendas and updates from 10 of the 12 advisory committees and task forces overseen by RUPRO, and to discuss with their chairs and principal staff the advisory group's charge, size, planned work, and planned work in the next year. And I should note that the exercise yesterday among the committees and their chairs was a slight change from the way things have been done in the past. Specifically, on November 16th of last year, RUPRO sent a letter to the committee chairs asking them to prioritize the proposals that they anticipated bringing before RUPRO and the Council in the upcoming year, this in an effort to get a better control over rules proposals and their importance. We assigned or defined as priority level one the following: A, that the proposal is urgently needed to conform to the law; B, the proposal is urgently needed to respond to a recent change in the law; C, a statute or council decision requires the adoption or amendment of rules or forms by a specific date; D, the proposal will provide significant cost savings and efficiencies, generate significant revenue, or avoid a significant loss of revenue; E, the change is urgently needed to remedy a problem that is causing significant cost or inconvenience to the courts or to the public; or F, that the proposal is otherwise urgent and necessary, such as a proposal that would mitigate exposure to immediate or severe financial or legal risk. And we ask the committee chairs and their committees to pay particular attention to their priority one proposals. Priority level two are those where the proposal is useful but not necessary to implement statutory changes, where it is responsive to identified concerns or problems, or helpful in otherwise advancing judicial council goals and objectives. RUPRO, the members of the committee yesterday, also stressed to the committee chairs and to their staff support persons that we hope that in the upcoming year on these various proposals, they keep firmly in mind the question as to whether or not any given proposal is one that is appropriate or necessary for statewide mandatory application, as opposed to an area or a proposal that is better left to the local courts and their communities, providing local autonomy for each of those courts and communities to handle certain issues in a way that best suits their particular needs. And we've emphasized both of those matters. RUPRO approved the annual agendas with some modifications, and we will review the annual agendas of the remaining two advisory groups, that is the Domestic Violence Implementation Task Force and the Probate and Mental Health Advisory Committee, late next week, either Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. That's the report of RUPRO. Chief, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Justice Hull. Questions or comments on the RUPRO report? Seeing none, we'll now turn to the report from Judge Herman on the California Case Management System Internal Committee.
Thank you, Chief. In response to the Council's direction to CCMS internal and the direction to the AOC to engage in the due diligence process regarding the three-way collaborative effort between the or among the Soon Shung Foundation, the State Bar, and the Judicial Council, the internal committee established essentially a steering committee that consisted of Justice Ashman Gerst, Kim Turner, Ira Kaufman on the CCMS internal side, as well as Justice Miller and Judge So, representing the executive committee to hold weekly teleconferences to monitor the status go forward of the due diligence process. In addition, the internal committee is a full a committee of the whole met three times since the December council meeting by teleconference on December 28th, January 5th, and January 18th. And on January 5th, we also, those of us that were local or had access to the council, conducted almost a full-day educational piece on CCMS and CCMS in terms of go forward. The actions taken by the committee during the period since the last council meeting included, first of all, what's already been mentioned by Ron Overholt and by Justice Miller, a recommendation to E&P and the Judicial Council to suspend further exploration of a potential three-way collaboration on the early deployment of CCMS. The reason for that suspension and that recommendation is the considerable complexities that the three parties have mutually identified among the conditions for a collaborative relationship. The committee's recommendation appears in the report presented to the council for consideration as a later agenda item. In addition, as Ron Overholt also mentioned, we've been working go forward with Grant Thornton in terms of what Grant Thornton is going to bring back to us orally sometime in February, and then in writing sometime in March with the council to address all of the issues regarding CCMS in the April meeting. And on behalf of the internal committee, I issued a letter to each court that has agreed, each of the 22 courts who agreed to assist Grant Thornton in terms of its survey as potential candidates for deployment post-early adopter, thanking the individuals involved in the process for the effort that they're going to put in to assist us with collecting the Grant Thornton data. And that's the end of the report.
Any questions or comments of Judge Herman? Thank you, Judge Herman.
I would mention that in addition, we have participated regularly in telephone conversations both with the Grant Thornton folks as well as with Deloitte on their continued progress in terms of the pre-deployment efforts.
Appreciate that. Back on our agenda, the minutes of our previous meeting are not ready for approval, so it brings us to our consent calendar. I'm informed that there has been no request to move any of the 10 items from consent to our discussion agenda. So we approve these 10 recommendations, which are on our agenda as items A1 through A9 and item B. We are ahead of schedule, so at this time I understand the parties are present to be able to present.